Hello, sexy nerds of the Nerd Imperium. Welcome to this week's episode of the Currently Nerdy Podcast. We are your inner conclave of nerdom. My name is Diz, and I am your pop culture and sports nerd. Allie.
I am Ollie, your classic nerd.
And I'm BM Comic Nerd.
Guys, sorry. I'm a little under the weather. My nose is stuffy.
It's also really hot.
It is. It's weird.
We've
had
a heat wave in Southern California.
Fucking 101 degrees outside.
It's 104 during the day.
How do I have a cold in this weather?
I think it is the bipolar weather because we had 70 degree weather just a couple days ago.
And now
from 70 to 104.
You know what else it is?
It's also the end of October. Can we just know that we're recording?
Halloween is next week.
Hallows Eve.
Halloween is like in 5 or 6 days, and somehow it's 104 degrees. And it's going to stay hot for the next few days, too. So
you know what else it is? Yeah. So it was my nephew's birthday on Sunday.
No one cares.
And I went to a birthday party.
He's also not your nephew.
He's my cousin's child.
Yeah,
it's not Afghan culture. He's my nephew.
It's not what you call a nephew.
Is that the kid you're always Snapchatting and shit?
Yeah,
him and his brother. But anyways, so
good kids.
There was a bunch of disease-ridden, fucking infestual little children.
In what?
Infestial. Is that a word?
I think you combined infected with vestigial in order to come up with your own word.
Infestial.
They, infected.
They carry diseases. They're little fucking, like, what was that thing? Beakers.
Petri dish.
Yeah, petri dishes of fucking.
They're beakers.
Beakers. Of diseases.
Beakers of chemicals.
These little fucks.
Petri dish, you fucking idiot.
They all got me sick.
Yeah.
But it was fun. We went to this place called Circus Tricks in Mission Viejo. It's like this little trampoline.
I saw your pictures and videos of that. Is that what it was?
Yeah. I smacked my brother in the head with that little thing. Like, pow.
Basketball on a trampoline type shit.
Yeah, I dunked on an 8-year-old.
It literally looks like my nightmare. I saw all the happiness and joy. This is a nightmare.
You know what's funny?
Didn't that used to be a Borders bookstore?
It was. They changed Borders into Circus Tricks.
You've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Where is this located again?
Off of El Paseo, where Borders was.
I didn't put two and two together that they tore down Borders to put that blasphemous.
Got taken down to become that Halloween store
this
for a while.
This fucking country is going to hell.
It was a Halloween store for
that
a little
Borders
bit.
Was my refuge from the world.
That was a really good Borders.
It was. I loved it over
because it was random, right? Like you have to go into a street and just. Like,
I told you about my trip to Borders that ended up becoming a journey.
No, what happened?
So I was working when I was
Hollywood Video.
I was young. No, I was working at my parents' pizza shop,
Italian Express.
Yeah.
why do you
context
as if that was necessary? Yeah. It's a pizza shop.
It's called Italian Express. He was a pizza delivery man.
I was delivering pizzas in my youth, and
he had hair back then. It was long and flowing.
I had very flowy locks, and I had this one that kind of came to El Toro.
Uh-huh.
Pretty far.
Uh-huh.
From where this was located, because this is in Lake Forest, but like in the middle of fucking Lake Forest.
Yeah, in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, at the edge of Lake Forest in Portola Hills.
Yeah.
So I thought in my mind, I was like, since I'm here, I'm going to swing by Borders.
That's the opposite.
Swing by Borders and pick me up Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm. Before you deliver the pizza?
After I delivered the pizza.
Ah, fair enough.
Pizza was done. I was like, pizza's done. Since I'm here.
Yeah.
Parents won't know because this was back in the day where my mom had banned me from buying books, so I had to sneak them in at night.
Oh, yeah. Did you have a cell phone back then?
I don't think so.
Uh-huh.
No, this was before I had a cell phone.
How the fuck did you find directions to these?
Those back in the day, we used maps.
Yeah. Google Maps.
In the day, right? Yeah. But this is in the 2000s.
Yeah.
People forget that technology just blew up in a short period of time.
Yo.
It's like
I didn't drive back then.
Smartphones weren't a thing until really 2008.
2010, really.
2007 was the year of the iPhone.
Right. I know that. But I'm saying generally, like everyone having smartphones is like a 2010 or 11 thing. That's not that ancient history. Before that, we had flip phones in the 2000s. This isn't the fucking 90s. It's the 80s. It's the 2000s. All right. Mm-hmm. I had one of the first smartphones. I had the HTC Incredible, not the first, but one of the earlier ones.
Yeah.
Wait, you had the pizza place. So that was probably our junior year, 2003.
Yeah, junior year.
Yeah.
2003 or so.
Yeah.
2003. Didn't have a cell phone.
Yeah, you were a real piece of shit back then.
Yeah, you were. I didn't have a cell phone until I turned 18.
Probably.
Anyways, so. I said, I'm going to swing by Borders. So I swung by Borders. Now, I was unaware that I was coming in during holiday shopping.
Mm.
This happened to be the second week of December.
You fool.
This center in addition to having Borders, also had Best Buy, Toys R Us, what else? A bunch of other
Sports Authority.
Sports Authority, a bunch of other shit that basically said, this is going to become a German blockade.
Yeah. And there's only one entrance to that.
There's only one entrance. So I went in, I got my book. It took me 1 hour to get out of just the parking lot because of how back-to-back the traffic was. Now, being who I was, I naturally just opened up the book while I was waiting and started to get my reading. But when I got back, I had been gone a solid 2 hours.
Oh, shit.
Delivery was made, so no one had called and complained. But I was gone for 2 hours.
And you're the only delivery man?
No, there was I was the only official delivery. There was other people who could deliver.
Uh-huh.
Right? My dad. Right? He could get in the car and deliver himself. And that's what he did.
Uh-huh.
So when I arrived, they're like, where the hell were you? And I'm like, oh, I just got lost.
Nah, 2 hours.
You could use that excuse.
2 hours. I said
you could use that excuse back
because
then.
People believed that you could get lost. For 2 hours, I got back. But.
You got your Harry Potter.
I got my Harry Potter
book. Which one was it? Prisoner of... No, it wasn't Azkaban. It was Goblet of Fire.
Whichever one came out in 2000 and whatever, 5 or something.
Goblet of Fire.
2000 and what?
2003.
It's either Goblet of Fire or Half-Blood Prince.
Yeah, I think it was...
Order of Phoenix.
I don't know what it was. It was a good book. I enjoyed it. It was a victory for me, but it was a journey.
Yeah. That Borders has a very special place in my heart as well because I got in trouble with the principal one time and he called my house.
Uh-huh.
My dad yelled at me. He got really upset because the principal called. He didn't quite exactly understand why I was getting in trouble, but he knew I was in trouble. So I ended up at that Borders for a couple hours so that everything would cool down in the house. It was my sanctuary.
Was this?
Yeah, it was my refuge too. I loved that Borders. So the fact that they've made it into what the fuck did you call it?
Circus Tricks.
The trampoline place now?
Yeah, it's a trampoline place. It was fun. It teaches these kids how to be ninja.
Might as
warriors.
Well be a front for drugs and money laundering.
And you know what's funny? So you know,
same thing in my mind.
You know how you thought it was
children's play place, drugs and money laundering.
Horrible.
So
physical activities,
happiness.
There was a
were they clowns?
No, there's no clowns there.
Why are they? Told circus tricks. Yeah, you would think
circus
they're
tricks, like trampoline tricks.
Okay, can you don't act like my question was so beyond. Of course, there's no. Clowns. It's fucking called circus. Tricks, okay, don't fucking
trampoline park.
Whatever.
Why would there be clowns at a trampoline?
It's called trampoline tricks.
Yeah, but they would call it trampoline something.
Because like circus tricks, you know, like you have the trapeze people doing their tricks on the trampolines and
no,
shit.
No, trapeze is when you.
It's a trapeze.
Swing. Whatever, man. They have a little trapeze.
Do you swing?
Thing. They have a little swing thing. Yeah, they had that. They had a bunch of stuff there. They had a little dodgeball thing. They had a basketball.
Look, I refuse to talk about this place further. They're not paying us. We don't have a sponsorship for them.
Oh, true. But here, I'm going to ruin their name.
They're going to be closed in 10 days.
Somebody,
fuck them.
So somebody your age was there, right?
What? What is that supposed to mean?
You old motherfucker.
You and I are literally 3 years apart.
Well, I'm on the right side of 30 because I'm not 30 yet.
Look, you, the
you're on the wrong
you
side of 30.
It, the worst it's going to be for you when you hit 30.
So that's look. True. So
receding hairline.
Have you done anything worthy?
No hairline.
Have you done anything worthy of a 27-year-old?
I'm 28, motherfucker.
Oh, whatever it is.
Oh, shit.
So, fuck you. Anyways, so she was just happened to be walking on the trampolines. She took one jump and fell and sprained her ankle.
You do know that 30-year-olds are not ancient.
She's 33.
Okay, yeah,
so,
it's a little older than me. Yeah. Not much, but
so she jumped once. She could have come down right.
If she had, like, her hip had given out, I would have been like, all right, yeah, that's fucking
yeah.
Her, anyone can sprain an ankle. It is an egalitarian disorder.
That is true.
is an egalitarian.
Ankles in general are bad.
It's an equal opportunity injury. Yeah.
She literally took one jump. One jump.
I'm going to trip you down the stairs and give you a sprained ankle. Like,
but that's attempted murder. See, you say that you don't condone or condemn violence, and yet... Here it comes.
No one heard anything. There's no evidence that I said that.
I heard trip. I didn't say anything here. So that's an act. That implies accident.
V, you're an
accomplice.
I didn't
say I push. I said you're going to trip down.
Yeah. V is an accomplice to your attempted murder.
First of all, I'm Vietnamese. Thank you very much.
That's what I said.
That's really fucked up.
What the fuck are you saying?
It's just assumptions.
Don't confuse me.
Stereotypes.
My mind gets confused.
Not to mention, you're not one to judge, Diz. Okay, I saw you lose your breath after eating french fries once.
Yeah,
what?
That's true.
That's probably.
I need to smoke.
I'm going to deny that.
I also, you know, can I call you out 1 second for last week's episode?
What'd I do
it
now?
It took him 2 weeks from the Chechnya accusation to come up with a comeback. Let's just put
no,
that
it has
out.
Nothing to do with that. No, because okay. Last week when we did the segment about about that hero, Gilberto Escamilla, and his 800-pound fajitas.
Gilberto. Hey, Amir listened to it. He said my math would have been right had I did 15, which I initially had guessed.
The only issue I had was I was listening back to the other day, and I'm talking about 800 pounds of fajitas, and I said laundered 800 pounds of fajitas. Ali goes, I don't know if laundering is the right language to use, and we literally talked about whether or not laundering was something, the proper term. Now, your ass zoned out so much that 15 seconds after he said that, you literally talked about how is laundering really something that it should you really be using laundering as the language for stealing 800 pounds of fajitas?
I don't recall this information being said by me. You're just making false accusations and trying to slander my good name. I would never, ever repeat something that Ali has said.
Well, you can't repeat most of what he says because you don't have the intellectual capacity.
I take offense to that, sir. I would never plagiarize Ali's thoughts.
You plagiarize my thoughts all the time. And not only do you plagiarize my thoughts, but what's particularly frustrating about it is that you tune me out, but your ears still function. So you absorb what I say.
I assume that he makes it up himself.
And in your egotistical mind, you're like, oh, that's really brilliant. I came up with this great idea. Then you regurgitate word for word what I just said as I stared directly into your beaded little eyes. So it's not just that you're plagiarizing. You internalize my language without even realizing it because you've tuned it out.
I would like to say that it's a great skill to have to zone you out and still take in what you said and turn it into my own.
It's not like you've actually learned anything. You just regurgitate what I say.
Literally did it last week.
Yeah. I cannot recall that this happened. I listened to the podcast twice last week, and I don't remember any of this happening.
Once again, he zoned out Ali's voice, and then...
V is just making up false accusations and slandering my good name. Listen, there's many people that listen to this podcast and think I'm a genius.
You want us to do this poll?
I couldn't finish it.
I don't think your self-confidence and self-esteem can take it.
I couldn't finish it.
If we open this floodgate, it may be the end of your life.
There are many people that listen to this podcast and find me enjoyable to listen to.
I'll give you that.
And you're just trying to slander my name.
They don't have to know you in real life. There's a difference.
That's true, yeah.
They can listen when they feel convenient. The rest of us have to actually put up with you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, people who know me love me, generally.
It's like having a really bad kid for two weekends out of
I feel like you're like a chihuahua.
I take offense to that.
Like, people go, oh, he's yapping again. But because you're small, they don't actually hate you.
I prefer, like, teacup Pomeranian.
No, because those are cute.
I am cute.
You're more annoying than cute.
Yeah. I'm cute as fuck.
People like being around teacup Pomeranian.
Yeah, you're a chihuahua. You also pee yourself.
It's never happened. Even when I'm drunk, I find a bush. I'm good at finding the bush.
Yeah, I know. You found that bush the one time on your birthday where you like elbow dropped.
Woo, Ric Flair.
Anyways, as we were discussing peeing, bushes, borders.
Barbara Bush?
That horrible, horrible
circus tricks.
Circus tricks place. This all reminded me of the circus that is the White House.
Oh, God.
Which is Donald John Trump.
We have a clown as a president.
Yes, we do. In political news, Jeff Flake has decided that he is not going to seek re-election. Now, Donald Trump naturally saw this as a victory for himself. He's like, that's right. He didn't know it was happening. But when it happened, he's like, that's right. He's unpopular as hell. Good riddance. But it caused quite a stir today.
Yeah, bro. This guy went on the Senate floor and gave a retirement speech, and he started going at it. He said that the Republican Party has become complicit, right? He said, I rise today with no small measure of regret. Regret because of the state of our disunion. Regret because of our despair and destructiveness of our politics. Regret because of the indecency of our discourse. Regret because of the coerceness of our leadership. Regret for the compromise of moral authority by all of our complicity in this alarming and dangerous state of affairs. He just went at it, bro. He said that there's a flagrant disregard for truth and decency. He said that there's a degradation.
Can we just point out, though, that like he says that there is, but it's coming from his party.
Yeah, I know.
Like, it's not like this is like a condition. Like, it's raining frogs. People, it's raining frogs. No, you're throwing frogs off the roof. don't act like it came out of nowhere.
And somehow he wasn't involved.
There's a flagrant disregard for truth. You guys literally had months of Benghazi hearings.
He goes,
come on.
We know better. We fooled ourselves for long enough that a pivot to governing is right around the corner, a return to civility and a stability right behind it. We know better than that.
Yeah. Well, they obviously don't. Nothing has really changed.
Now, do you have a confession to make about Jeff Flake?
I had no idea who he was.
Yeah. When we proposed this topic, this is like, who?
Yeah, I mean, who dat? And V said, your mother. And I realized that Jeff Flake was not my mother because he was a man and he could not give birth to me, V. So, haha,
don't assume his gender.
On you. He's a cis male. He likes to be referred to him. So you said he, don't refer.
You social justice warriors.
Yeah, his gender. Yeah, I don't know who he was.
You had to literally look.
But you know what the nice thing was? Yeah. Was literally 20 minutes after V said, let's talk about Flake.
I got a CNN alert.
I was like, ooh, this is what V was talking about.
Well, you know, Flake man. The fact that you don't know who he is, it means you haven't been paying attention. He's one of the handful of Republican senators.
I know the other ones.
Kind of contending with, like, not in a harsh way, but him and Flake have had words. Yeah, Flake and Trump have had words, and then McCain and Trump have had words. Corker and Trump have had words.
And those women, the two women.
They haven't had words, they just don't vote for
them. Yeah. I think it's more
Collins
so,
and Murkowski.
I feel like when it comes to this, though, it's more so, not so much they're against the policies that they're pushing for, just as much as they're just not into Trump's personality.
No.
Because, I mean, those politicians tend to be pretty spineless when it comes to voting on things against party lines, right? They just kind of go with whatever their party
is. Yeah, let's look at Mitch McConnell, for example.
I think with Trump, it's, his personality is just so appalling to these people that they just go against him naturally. It's not so much because, like, I feel like if it was Mike Pence there and he was pushing the same exact policies, I don't think there would be this type of pushback.
And let's be clear, there isn't this type of pushback.
Yeah. It's five people.
There's like a handful. Exactly, it's not even five. It's three guys. And they don't always push back. Sometimes they're like, oh, yeah, I agree with the president.
Yeah.
Yeah, well that's
bullshit.
What does the guy from England say? Spineless.
Supine proto. Yeah. Plasmic.
Boris Johnson.
That's the name. The English Trump.
But that guy's.
He's not actually the English Trump. That's a really Boris Johnson cultivates a deliberate buffoon persona. He's actually ridiculously cunning.
Hashtag Brexit.
He says a lot of fucked up things, don't get me wrong. There's no admiration there. He says some fucked up things. He says some offensive things. But it's a deliberate cultivation of a persona. Boris Johnson is a expert in classics. Go and look up Boris Johnson, a Churchill speech.
What does it mean to be an expert in classics?
That means you've studied, you've done the traditional medieval training in the classics. So you've studied Greek, Latin, Plato, Aristotle.
So like classic philosophy?
Classics refers to both a time period and a body of literature and philosophy.
You're just throwing words at me.
Classics.
The Greco-Roman world.
He go and look up his Boris Johnson Churchill speech, and all of a sudden you'll see him as he breaks down the speech.
Uh-huh.
Right, he talks about chiasmus and the difference between using Frankish words and Saxon words, and how it really. You, all of a sudden, you see the facade drop.
Do you understand anything he's saying?
How utterly cunning this man really is. Trump isn't cunning. He's just a baby throwing shit at the walls, and sometimes that shit makes shapes.
So think about it like this. A lot of people kind of like... So think about like someone who likes Sheldon for his autism, right?
Okay.
And Big Bang Theory.
Okay.
He's brilliant, right? But there's like people like his character because he has that weird things about, you know, touching and the knocks, compulsive behaviors.
Okay.
People are, you know, they're kind of... They adhere themselves or they adore... What is it? Adhere themselves? I don't know.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. They kind of... They enjoy those behaviors.
Okay.
But they're also... Sheldon kind of creates an unintimidating facade when in actuality... You know, he's a genius. He can kill people with his genius. Boris, on that side, he does that whole weird, he's goofy and awful and crazy.
Uh-huh.
But his views and his ability to politic are very dangerous. He uses that facade as a weapon to kind of move forward in politics. And to also kind of create this idea that maybe he's just kind of this unintimidating guy who wears ill-fitting shirts and, you know, puts his belly out and shit.
Uh-huh. See, that I understood. Yours... Frankish, Germanic, Saxon.
You're on an extra level of stupid today.
I'm under the weather. I don't know.
Must be blocking the brain cells.
The reality of Flake, though, is that this Republicans are caught between a hard and between a rock and a hard place.
I see them.
They are having difficulties. And the reality is that on one hand, they have to contend with what are known as the GOP primary voters.
Okay.
The GOP primary voters have become extremists. These are the people that go and vote on off seasons, right? Off elections, right? These are the people that aren't going to show up just for the presidential election. These are people who are going to vote regularly, and they have very vocal. So they're a minority. They're not a majority.
Yeah.
They're generally believed to be about 25 to 30% of actual Republicans. We've seen this before, too. When Fox News has hosted debates, right, there was one debate, one instance in which a soldier came on screen and talked about, this was a soldier, right, who were supposed to be sacred in the eyes of the Republicans. They're always talking about respecting the troops and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And he talked about him being gay. And he's like, do I have to go back into a closet, et cetera, talking about don't ask, don't tell.
Uh-huh.
And the audience booed him. This is the Republican GOP. The same audience then cheered the death penalty.
I remember that.
So the Republican primary voters have become more and more extreme over the years, mostly thanks to the fact that they're in a sort of media loop, an alternate reality created by a loop of Breitbart, Fox News.
Do you know the Facebook, age demographic of these people?
Pretty old. They are generally older.
That's the baby boomers.
But here's the thing. That used to be the thing when it came to Fox News. Everyone's just, we're going to wait these people out.
Uh-huh.
You're not going to convert Fox News viewers.
No.
But you can outlive them.
Yes.
They're just going to die.
Yes.
But that no longer works in the era of Breitbart and Facebook.
No, because they're fucking getting these white people.
Now they're younger white people that are participating. So you're not going to outlive them.
Cucks.
You have to address it. So on one hand, you have these primary voters that are more and more extreme. They want more Trump.
Uh-huh.
Right? We saw this in Alabama. Donald Trump actually endorsed the very mainstream establishment conservative, Luther Strange.
Right? Sounds like a super.
Yeah, so he endorsed that guy. The guy who was more Trump than Trump, Roy Moore, is the one who won. So even though Donald Trump endorsed the moderate, the extremist one.
Yeah.
This is a guy who wants to ban gay marriage, who thinks it's illegal, who only Christians should hold office in government. He's been sanctioned by the Supreme Court like about several times. Right? This guy is horrible. But that goes to show you where the Republican primary voters are.
Yeah.
In contrast to where ordinary voters are, which are independent. Like, how does a person like Jeff Flake run as a Republican in Arizona? If he's going to be primaried by someone who's an extremist, he's going to lose that. But then when the extremists and him go up in normal voting in the kind of general election in Arizona, he ends up winning.
Yeah.
So the Republicans are caught in this difficult place. What happens if you go, okay, fine, we're going to primary people like Jeff Flake? Jeff Flake no longer wins primaries because he's not extreme enough. So you put in an extremist, but then they lose that seat in the general election. We see this happening sort of in Alabama. Alabama's Democrat is catching up and now equal to Roy Moore. Now, does that mean he's going to win? This is not a John Ossoff type shit. You're not going to see everyone else, yeah, he can win. Chances are he may very well lose. But there's a slim chance he could win. And that slim chance means what? Alabama went from a safe Republican red state.
Session state.
To a suddenly competitive state.
The fields are changing.
The fields are changing because where the primary voters are and where they keep putting their influence is not where the rest of the country is. So you have this kind of civil war happening in the Republican Party. And guess what? It's their fucking fault.
Can I push back?
They allowed this extremism to take root. They spent 8 years fostering it under the Obama administration. Where was Jeff Flake when Obama was called a Kenyan, when they were asked for his birth certificate? Where was Jeff Flake when the Republican administration obstructed every single thing that Obama did, when they completely blocked him, even when he was making pretty establishment centrist, kind of neoliberal, pro-market choices? Where were they? They still obstructed him. That's the reality. They brought this upon themselves. They're now being torn apart from the inside. Good riddance to the entire party.
Can I push back just a little bit here?
No, you're going to be wrong.
I'm probably going to be wrong. But so here's my thing. I guess you're wrong. You said that, you know, they keep putting up these extremists during their primaries, and then eventually these extremists fail. Right?
No. It's not that they eventually fail. It's that they make those areas more competitive when they shouldn't.
Now, they put up an extremist for fucking president of this country.
He lost the popular vote.
But he won where it mattered.
You know, you're not understanding what I'm saying. I'm not saying that they don't win political office. Uh-huh. Plenty of extreme Republicans are in office. The whole Tea Party caucus is proof of that.
Yeah.
What we're seeing is a momentum. The movement of the country is headed differently from where Republicans are headed. As a result, the gap is going to become more and more extreme. Sure, they'll continue to win a few seats, but down the line, they're going to lose more and more seats. We've already seen that in the special elections, that the momentum is leaning blue. In a lot of the special elections...
With, like, ass Democrat, off?
Not Ossoff. No. But the other ones in Florida, a lot of the local ones, which is where the big change is going to happen. You're going to see people running for mayor, people running for governor, etc. That's state legislature. That's huge. Because what that does is that turns the tide, makes the states turn blue. And then you can start to redistrict.
Aha, gerrymandering.
Right? Or you push back against gerrymandering. Right? You go, okay, there's been a lot of gerrymandering. We need to fix this. So this is the more the momentum is going. Does that mean Alabama's going to go blue next time? Probably not. Roy Moore may very well get elected. But now the Republicans have to spend money on a campaign that they didn't have to spend money on. Yeah. They're wasting money. They're fighting in places they don't have to fight.
They have to empty coffers in order to keep the...
That's what hurts. Uh-huh. So it's not just who wins, it's how you win. If you end up bankrupting your party just because you need to fight in all 50 states...
Yeah, when you didn't have to before. Okay. You
didn't have to
before. Actually, fair enough. That makes sense. It kind of reminds me of... remember that Robert Downey Jr. Sherlock Holmes movie, the first one?
Yes.
Oh, Lord Blackwood, right?
Yeah, I actually just watched clips
of it. It's a great, great movie. Yeah. But they talk about... At the end, Sherlock talks about, oh, well, you know, you did all the incantations. You said all the words. Uh-huh. So I say the devil's about to do a soul.
Yeah.
In this same situation, what they did was they sat there and they cultivated this kind of groundswell of hate.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Now that hate is coming to roost here and it's uncontrollable for them. Uh-huh. Right? So the boil is beginning to kind of pus over now and they can't control it anymore.
What we see in the Republican Party is evidence of a state that is starting to collapse by all measures. Because partisanship is one of the key and instrumental signs of a Democratic failure. When there's always going to be partisanship in the sense that you're going to have parties that compete.
Yeah.
But when parties can no longer sit down with one another, McCain talks about the fact that he was just doing an interview today that he's worked with Democratic senators, and when he works with them, he gets people that come up to him and go, how could you work with Democrats? They're the enemy. When you view the other party as the enemy, right, it no longer works. And Democrats aren't innocent in this either. Yeah. Democrats have also created a bit of a loop in which all Republicans are bad people, in which no conservative ideas are partisan. Now, that's partly because it's a response. The Democrats didn't start off partisan. In fact, the Democrats have been pretty spineless when it comes to using their mandate. They generally are very collaborative. They want to work across aisles. It isn't until recently that they've become partisan in response to the partisanship that we've seen in the Republican Party. So Jeff Flake leaving isn't a victory for Republicans. It sure as hell isn't a victory for Donald Trump. It's a sign that his party is in disarray and collapsing around him. Does that mean there's going to be a mass exodus? No. But it means until January 2019, Jeff Flake is a thorn in his side with nothing to lose. Yeah. John McCain is a thorn in his side with nothing to lose. Corker is a thorn in his side with nothing to lose. These people can become very problematic for Trump.
Flake and McCain both from Arizona?
They're both from Arizona.
Because Flake is the deputy. What is it?
He's the junior senator. He's the younger senator.
I think this is also... remember The Office where the guy with puts the dime in the telephone every single day?
Oh, yeah. Diabolical Ali.
Yeah.
Jim.
Scheme.
But then, like, eventually when you take the dimes out, he hits himself in the face.
Jim Halpert. Mm. Yeah, he kept putting...
Right.
Yeah.
It shows it's like you can... Little contributions to opposition, mm-hmm. right? Little bits or taking like little pieces away may not seem like a lot, you know, on a single day. But over time, over the amount of time that they have left, can cause a lot of damage.
Well, I mean, you have to acknowledge the fact, right, that when 9/11, I'm not 9/11, when Donald Trump on 11/9 was elected.
Wow.
Who cheered? Nazis and white supremacists.
Yeah.
You can't deny the fact that right after, literally the day after, Richard Spencer held a meeting, a conference in Washington, D.C., in which they Zeke-hailed.
Yeah.
Right? Richard Spencer was just recently in Florida.
Yes.
Now, this is a topic that we've been meaning to cover for a long time, but it really ties into the Jeff Flake story well, right? The Richard Spencers of the world is what Republicans have cultivated for years.
Shut up.
Not as overtly, but we had actually one of our listeners recommend this.
Jonathan Tipton.
Yeah, he recommended this, and we've been meaning to talk about it.
So he's not a Nazi.
No, he's not. He gave us the he's a wonderful nerd of the Nerd Imperium.
Yes. The wonderful white man.
Yeah, he got just randomly. He gave us the kick in the ass we needed to have this conversation. So he was recently in Florida, Richard Spencer. For those of you who don't know who Richard Spencer is, he's kind of the guy that coined the term alt-right. There's an argument between him and his professor that might have possibly advised him on coming up with the term alt-right.
Yeah.
Right. But he's the head figure.
Yeah, he's the one who tries to make the alt-right look cool.
Yeah, and the alt-right is a coalition movement. It's not a singular movement in any way, shape, or form.
Uh-huh.
There's a variety of different people. There's people like the Steve Bannons of the world, who are economic nationalists. There's the Stephen Millers of the world, who are kind of, and the Michael Actons, who are the kind of ideologues that shape the alt-right as a counter and as a sort of insurgency in conservatism. And then there's the white supremacists and white nationalists like Richard Spencer.
Yeah, Richard Spencer. Would you consider Alex Jones one of those?
Alex Jones would be the conspiracy theory. He's the media figure in all of this, right? Along with Breitbart. But Richard Spencer is the white nationalist wing of the alt-right.
He's a younger guy, too.
He's a younger guy.
He's in his mid-30s.
Went to Duke University, I should point out.
Shout out to Duke.
Shout out to Duke for putting out. Not only did he go to Duke, but Stephen Miller also went to Duke. So good on you, Duke University.
But they have like this really cool person.
They do have this one cool person.
Just one.
She's awesome.
She's dope.
She's the best.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, just shut up.
None of your fucking business.
Stop getting in our business.
I'm just kidding. So he was in Florida, in the probably the bluest district in Florida, for the record.
Where'd he go? Orlando or my?
And he went to the University of Florida, which is solidly Tallahassee. Blue. And he gave a speech.
Yes, he did. But before he went to the University of Florida to give this speech, the Daily Stormer, which is like the fucking neo-Nazi
website,
newspaper, right?
I thought that was a weather website.
A Daily Stormer?
God damn it, Vito. No.
I thought it was a Star Wars reference.
Slight chance of white.
I thought.
Not a slight chance. Let's face it.
I thought it was like a newsletter.
What is it called? Storm, like whiteouts? Is that what you were? Is that what you thought a whiteout was? Oh, it's a storm.
Yeah, well, yeah. I don't know.
Like, I thought it was a newsletter passed by the stormtroopers that they were giving out.
I'm surrounded by idiots.
Yeah. But anyways, so they gave out tips to people that were going to go to this speech in Florida. They told them to cover all their Nazi and white power tattoos, right? So if you're going to come and you have tattoos on your arms about white power, wear long sleeves in the Florida humidity. Please wear your long sleeves so people can't see it. They also told them not to wear any uniform and to go in there dressed normally, no uniform or racist anything. Right, that's what Andrew Engelin, the neo-Nazi blogger, wrote. He's like, no white polos or khakis, no flags or signs. If you got a Nazi tattoo, cover them up. So he gave them out tips because, you know what, we saw what happened in Charlottesville, right? They came out there dressed in their khakis and their white polos with their Nazi flags and their tattoos showing this white power. So they didn't want the same thing to happen here in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a narrative that was shaped out of how they looked in Charlottesville, right?
Well, they have a look now. Uh-huh. It's white polos and the khaki pants.
Yeah.
That look is a rebranding that actually started in the 90s. So the brief history of white supremacy, white nationalism, and the KKK in the United States. So in the 90s, there was an attempt to rebrand that happened.
Okay.
And what they said is two things.
Uh-huh.
One, don't look like a Nazi.
Okay.
That's the key.
So no more skinheads.
No more. I mean, there were still some elements of that, right? The KKK in particular still were about marching in robes and fucking pillowcases. And they were still about tattoos and whatnot. But the overwhelming majority of them went, we need to stop looking like Nazis.
Yeah.
The second was infiltration and recruitment. So the infiltration component was, if you can stop looking like a Nazi, you can then join really important places. And what they wanted people to join, white nationalists to join, was
law enforcement.
Yeah, police officers.
So the FBI did a study on this, actually. And unfortunately, the funding for this got cut. But the study was released. The FBI found that there is a disproportionate and alarming number of white supremacists who have ended up in leadership positions in law enforcement.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Jeff Sessions. It's a perfect example.
So that was part of it, infiltration. The second component was recruitment. And the recruitment focused on two people. They said white tech guys, because the white tech guys are all feeling alienated. They're working in an industry that is predominantly male, but they're now being told this is part of the post-Gamergate moment, right? Uh-huh. They said, look, there's this debate over feminism going on. Look at someone like Milo Yiannopoulos, Sargon of Akkad, etc. Richard Spencer has even gone so far as to say Sargon of Akkad is a perfect gateway for us. Perfect gateway.
Uh-huh.
Those people who red pill, right? Yeah. Who are into the whole debating against feminism, debating against multiculturalism, who claim to be classic liberals and so-called skeptics, like the YouTube skeptic community, uh-huh. often end up fulfilling the agenda of white nationalists without even realizing it, right? They end up being really good, useful fools, if you will. Uh-huh. Right. So they recruit the tech guys. And then the second people that they want to recruit is military vets who have come back, who are used to feeling part of a society or a group or a platoon or whatnot, feel alienated and frustrated with the direction of the country. They can then take that and channel it towards a type of hate. And now you have someone who already has the training.
Yeah.
This is why you have people like Nathan DiMaggio, who runs his own alt-right movement. He's the guy that punched the woman in Berkeley who wore the all jeans. That guy was dishonorably discharged from the military. He's a military dude who's in one of the Cal States. I think he's at Cal State Monterey or Cal State Fresno or some shit.
One of the ones that no one cares about.
Yeah. Well, the Cal States are actually really good schools. Let's point that out.
Fresno State's a good school.
Yeah, Fresno State's actually one of the best.
Hashtag go Bulldogs.
When it comes
it goes Fresno, Cal State, and I mean, Fullerton, Long Beach, that's the ranking. Go on.
When it comes to creating the wardrobe for white supremacists, did they do it in like BuzzFeed listicle form? Like 8 things to wear for your summertime of hate?
Look, we joke about that, but the reality is that they've adopted that internet culture and they've made it like really accessible. So they are. We joke, we go BuzzFeed listicle, but guess what? There's a reason they use Pepe the Frog. There's a reason they use meme culture. There's a reason they use this type of language. I mean, memes and GIFs are a big part of what they do.
Yeah.
Right? The absurdist meme. I mean, when you have old ass fucking shit, David Duke, using memes, that tells you something, right? They've learned that recruitment tech, and it works well. I've said it before. I've seen it in classrooms. I've seen it on the campus. You have people who agree with the principles of, say, feminism or socialism or believe in the principles of equality or whatnot, but who, when you say Milo Yiannopoulos, will go, yeah, free speech. He should be allowed to say whatever he wants.
Yeah, which is stupid, right? I don't think people understand what free speech means.
Well, it's free speech. It's not violent.
No, that's not how it works, man, because shit like this gets violent. Like, you have these fucks from around here. So it's called RAM, the Rise Against Movement. They formed in San Clemente, Huntington Beach, Hermosa Beach, and Redondo Beach, right? Yep. 4 fucking beautiful-ass cities. You have all these fucking rich-ass...
Yeah, but they'll actually have a history of...
Yeah, Huntington Beach for sure.
Huntington Beach, Anaheim, these areas are...
Yeah, Huntington Beach was the KKK stronghold, right? So, like, people don't realize that shit. Like, my cousin asked me to move in with him, and Huntington Beach was like, fuck no. Like, there's no way in hell I'm moving to Huntington Beach. But these people, what they're doing now, right, they're a Southern California-based group of white supremacists that will literally learn how to fight. So they train in mixed martial arts, mm-hmm. right? So they learn how to do hand-to-hand combat.
Right.
They go in dressed, like, in uniform, right. wearing masks, and attack people. Like,
yeah,
these
yeah,
people yeah. are violent as fuck. And the thing is, the law enforcement isn't doing shit
about
it.
There's a recent video about this put out by ProPublica who did a long-term research into them, documented their activities, and have noted that nothing has actually been done.
They have people that were in Charlotte that were violent in Charlotte. There's videos of them. There's pictures of them. Like, they have criminal records in the past. Like, people have gotten, like, concealed weapons charges, attempted murder charges, like, you know, like, all these things. But yet, when their videos are out of them attacking people and they're shown to law enforcement here has done jack shit.
Hmm.
Fuck you, Orange County Sheriff's Department, for not doing anything about these people. It's sad, because that's what this free speech leads to, right? Like, oh, yeah, we could just... It's just words. Words don't hurt, bro. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me.
Yeah, that's bullshit, because whenever you mention something like feminism, they got all pissed off. the word to her, in their opinion. And also, it's the identity movements in and of itself are problematic within our culture. You know, when we talk about these people, or you were talking about how they were trying to hide all their
tattoos, you know,
their tattoos and all that other stuff. Daily Stormer actually talked about how they wanted to confuse the situation to create public attention and then make it look like the illusion that the city was being taken over by white supremacists and, you know, people who are pro-ethno, the ethno state, right?
They're fucking shameless.
But, like, you think about something like a, I mean, we talk about the uniform, right? That in and of itself already kind of shows that there is that identifying piece.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you see that, you saw that with Nazi Germany, Mussolini. They all had these kind of street gangs that had uniforms.
Yeah. An article on The Atlantic called His Kampf.
Yeah.
Talked about this guy who wrote, who grew up with Richard Spencer.
Uh-huh.
And he went and he interviewed him, right? And they were talking about, and this is a really great kind of quote, the importance of identity creation for Spencer cannot be overstated. It's why every black-on-white rape must be portrayed as the ravaging of all white womanhood, and every Syrian orphan who moves into an American city as general of a colonizing army, right? So it's he talks about in that article how this type of identification is important for the movement. And they also talk about how when he talked to Spencer about how the what ISIS's strategy of recruiting people is also a strategy that he also wants to adopt.
Oh, shit. This is a comparison I've made on this podcast several times.
Yeah.
And repeatedly, and even in my academic work, I was just recently cited in Mazan, the journal, Middle Eastern journal, that cites my...
The Council of Shamshir.
My article on, after Orlando, I wrote an article for Religion Dispatches, which is a online journal about religion and politics, in which I argue that the white supremacist male toxic violence that we see in America is similar to the one that we see in ISIS, and they have very similar recruiting techniques, and that is that they rely on the sort of sense of, the perception of emasculation, right? That you were emasculated as an individual, you were powerless or you were impotent, and therefore we can grant you power. And he does this very clearly. I'm going to push back a little bit on what you said. You said that there's problematic elements in identity movements. I disagree. Identity movements are a necessary function of democracy, in particular, majoritarian democracy, in which you have a majority.
Oh.
You have a majority that rules over a minority, right? And that is a white population ruling over a series of minority populations. Those minority populations should organize themselves in a way that protects their interests. That's the that's in order to ensure democracy survives. The problem becomes when identity politics only fixates on superficial change without any structural change. And we talked about this in our identity politics episode, so go check that episode out.
Oh, yes.
But I think identity politics is fundamentally a good thing. It's not a bad thing. But that what happened is that you have the Richard Spencers of the world, the Stephen Millers of the world, who came into these really liberal spaces, and they didn't come in to learn. They came in to not learn content, but learn tactic. So what they did is they modeled themselves. They went in. So you look at Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon is really just drawing upon Lenin. And he's very open about it. He's like, yeah, I'm a Leninist.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean he wants a communist state.
No.
He's an economic nationalist.
Yeah.
But what he's doing is he went into these places. He comes out of Claremont Graduate School. Studied these kind of liberal thinkers. Michael Acton, same thing. They studied these kind of liberal thinkers. Richard Spencer came out of Duke, studied political science and studied liberal thinking in Duke, but he learned the tactics of identity politics. He didn't go, oh yeah, I see where identity politics is coming from. It's from the civil rights movement, the fact that you had these minority populations that were being taken
advantage of. How can I co-opt this?
He goes, how can I co-opt this and make it for white people? So all the alt-right, Gamergate, Richard Spencer, all kind of fashion it. The funny thing about it is, it's all fucking fabricated.
Yeah.
Unlike real identity politics, which is a grassroots movement, it starts out of the students' nonviolent movements on campuses, right?
Yeah.
During the Vietnam War and the civil rights era. These are movements in response to literal violence. He is a rich fucking dude whose family used to own plantations, lives on mommy and daddy's farm. They give him all that money, and then he comes in and acts like a man of the people. You take Milo Yiannopoulos with a recent BuzzFeed expose on him, revealed that Milo Yiannopoulos was nothing more than a wannabe fucking, he was just a tech reporter that wanted to be a media celebrity, social media star. And what did that happen? Steve Bannon connected him to Robert Mercer, this billionaire, who funded his campaign. He said, go around and offend people and I'll make you into a star. Literally, his words were, I will make you into a star. His job was to create controversy, not to worry about content, not to talk. They don't care what he talked about.
Yeah.
As long as he was able to make these little publicity stunts.
And he just bought into his own bullshit.
And then all of a sudden you have these people on campuses talking about Malu Yiannopoulos, this champion of free speech. He's not a champion of free speech. He's a champion of Robert Mercer.
Yeah.
He got paid millions of dollars to go around campus. You don't want to follow the money, right? It's all fucking fabricated. Follow the money with Richard Spencer. Follow the money with
fake
news. Malu Yiannopoulos. It's all fucking fabricated by rich billionaires who are taking white poor people and going, don't blame us rich people. Blame the black guy.
Blame the
you
gays.
Didn't lose your job because I happened to have downsized or laid you off. You lost your job because the Mexicans took it.
What's sad is that it happens to work, though, which is really messed up.
It's the oldest trick in the book. It's the Southern strategy taken to the digital level. That's what it is. It's the oldest, but it started before the Southern strategy. How do you think slave owners convinced white poor people who had more in common with black slaves to be overseers? Because they said, you know what? At least you're white like me.
Yep. White like me.
Never mind that you live in almost the exact same living conditions as a slave. Yeah. You live on the plantation in the same type of house. You get almost the same amount of pay. But guess what? You got the whip because you and I, we're brothers. Yeah. That's the oldest trick in the book.
I really think, actually, it almost applies to my, I used to work at a 5-star resort. Uh-huh. And they didn't pay jack shit, right? Really, for anyone.
And they made you sign NDAs and shit.
But they did this thing where they always kind of went, you know, what you get from your resume out of this is really what's gonna, what differentiates you from everybody else.
Right.
Who's trying to get those jobs.
BS of, it looks good on your resume.
Yeah, exactly, right. So it's almost, I mean, not to that same extreme, right? But it's almost the same concept.
It's bullshit.
It's bullshit. It's full of shite.
I wanted to link this in certain ways to a comic book experience, and that is the X-Men. In the X-Men, there is a movement known as the Purifiers. V, you can attest to this as our comic book guy, right?
I don't know anything about comics.
The Purifiers are literally white nationalists, but they're anti-mutants.
Yes.
Right? And what happens is this comes after Stryker's family dies and all that. He becomes one of the big people that moves the Purifiers along. Now, we can do a whole segment on the Purifiers, their connections to kind of crusading mythology and the white supremacists. They are very much, they're modeled after, because remember, the X-Men are a metaphor for the civil rights.
Yes.
Right? And in many ways, a metaphor of whatever the civil rights movement is for that time period.
Uh-huh.
The civil rights movement of black Americans and looking for equality was the heart of mutant project or the mutant story, but it also quickly turned into the story of gay liberation, the LGBTQ movement, and now in many ways you see it as the story of immigrants, Muslims, etc. So whatever the civil rights moment is, that's what it represents.
We love you, X-Men.
So the Purifiers are a direct metaphor of white supremacy. Literally the KKK marching against people like Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X, etc. But the thing I find fascinating about the comic, and why I think this comic book is useful, is that it shows radicalization.
Uh-huh.
They rely on fear particularly. You who are a Homo sapien, you are now going to become a minority because those Homo superiors,
uh-huh.
they may look like you, they may sound like you, but they're not you. There's something wholly other about them. And that otherness is a threat. They rely on that fear as a radicalizing tool, using that sense of impotency, using that sense of I don't have power, I'm about to be replaced, and radicalizing it by going, hey, we're going to give you power so that you can strike back. It's an exploitative relationship. It's a great fucking con.
So there's with Strikers, if you actually read God Loves, Man Kills, that's kind of where he comes through. But his family's actually mutants themselves.
Yeah.
This is interesting.
It's his like family dies, doesn't it? Yeah,
he kills them.
Yeah.
He kills them and he tries to kill himself. But imagine, I think this is really actually very interesting because it connects, I think, with these modern white supremacists. The fact that they're trying to destroy a past that they don't like and recreate a new one.
That's exactly what they're doing.
Right? And with a guy like Stryker, you know, he creates the Purifiers. And I also wanted to bring up another guy named Graydon Creed.
Yeah,
in the Marvel Universe.
Huge.
Because he's actually the son of Victor Creed and Mystique.
Yeah.
Right? Now, Graydon Creed creates the Friends of Humanity. Now, the Friends of Humanity is also, dedicated to opposing mutant civil rights. They commit acts of terrorism, and they do things like that. Graydon Creed, in and of himself, is also a political activist. That's pro-human.
Yeah.
He fits along the side because technically his upbringing is really not that different from every average person. Uh-huh. He was just so upset that the mutants abandoned him.
That's exactly the key there, right? Yeah. There's usually some type of personal component to the radicalization, right? Something has happened, right? More importantly to that, and this is where I think Victor Creed and I think William Stryker, Graydon Creed, really help us understand radicalization, is that they don't see themselves as fundamentally violent in the sense that they are out doing destructive things. They see themselves as a vanguard, as protectors of something that they feel is threatened. The reality is that Homo sapiens are a majority still.
Yeah.
Homo superiors are a minority, and even more so after House of M.
Yeah, after M Day.
Right? Yeah. Even more so. But yet there's this idea they're going to outpace us. They're the future. The threat of, there's a sort of demographic threat that they feel, and so they respond to that. So the purifiers are act as a vanguard. White supremacists do the exact same thing. White supremacists aren't always outright KKK people.
Yeah.
White supremacists can very well be that tech guy who works in that one startup and goes, you know what? I think I should hire white people. I'm sick of this diversity shit.
Yeah.
I'm sick of looking around because it's been branded that way.
You know what throws me off?
As a tactic. Oh, look, man, you're not being racist. You're just looking out for your own.
Yeah.
Now, the frightening thing is they use very clear Nazi language. The 14 words and all that, this whole idea.
Yeah. Blood and Guten,
right? The blood and soil argument. They use very clear Nazi language. And they also use modern science.
Yeah.
These are not anti-science people. In fact, they use a perverted version of science that was discarded in the early 20th century.
Eugenics.
That is eugenics, right? Yeah. The race science that gave us the Nazis, that gave us things like the Racial Integrity Act of the United States, of eugenics in the United States. Uh-huh. They readopt this. They go, there is clear evidence of that genetics influence, but they don't acknowledge, none of them are actual scientists.
Yeah.
Most of them have a very limited understanding of genetics. They don't acknowledge things that genetics is only a small component of what makes a person. The geography is just as big. Where you grow up, not just environment, like nurture versus nature.
No, but like
literally
what neighborhood you're in,
geography,
stuff,
like where you are. Like the fact that you people have black skin versus white skin has less to do with genetic differences and the fact that they grow up in a place that's as cold as Scandinavia or as hot as sub-Saharan Africa. That's really, they don't get that.
Yeah.
But they then moralize that difference.
No, right? But I think it's funny that white people are like so afraid of becoming a minority. It's because they realize how they fucking treat minorities in this country.
If you haven't done anything, if minorities are, there's a fantastic Jane Elliott. She does this. She's a race educator.
Uh-huh.
She does this thing, and I think she's one of the most effective.
The blue eye, brown eye.
That's her famous experiment. But she actually has a very famous quote that she uses with white people often. She goes, "It's simple. Would anyone in this room trade places with a black person? If black people have a good, if it's all good now, we're all equal, would you trade places with a black person?" And she asked the question twice. How many times do you think someone's raised their hands like, "Oh, I'd trade places with a black person"?
Not very often.
No one.
Yeah. So here's the thing.
And she goes, that's because you know inherently that
there's something. So check us out.
And that's the same argument you're making.
No. So my friend.
It is the same argument.
No.
No, listen. Like, no.
I think it's interesting.
Yeah.
Because my friend Pierre on Facebook, right? He's African American. Yeah. He posted a status. He's like, ask white people one thing, right? Under his status. So like a bunch of people started asking stuff. And this like girl I went to high school with, her name is Kelsey. So she's white, but she's married to a black guy.
Yeah.
Right. So she answered these questions, and one of the questions I was asked was, would you want to be black? And she goes, given today's state where you know, like minorities are being targeted, she's like, there's no way in hell that I'd want to switch places. She's like, and I have mixed children. My children are both black and white, but I'm scared for them because they're still a minority.
Yeah.
She's like, where I don't have to, like, if I'm out, I don't have to feel that way. But if my children are out by themselves or with my husband, then they get targeted. So no, I wouldn't switch being white.
Yeah.
Like,
look, and this has got to be, V has a story to tell us. So I don't want to cut into the story because I want to hear the story. He's another currently nerdy spirit animal. So I'm just going to leave this conversation at this. Listen up, white people.
Yeah.
White people, I got to talk to you.
Dear white people.
Dear white people. You're being defrauded.
Yes.
You're being conned.
They're duping you.
It's a good con, too.
Yeah.
They've convinced you.
It's a long con.
It's a long con. Started in the 16th century.
Yep.
They've convinced you. They've convinced you.
They've changed your mind.
Things like PC culture and free speech.
Free speech.
These things are stifling you.
They're
holding you back.
holding you back.
They're keeping you from enjoying your freedoms.
Your freedoms.
Can you stop that?
You need a hype man.
They're keeping you from enjoying your freedoms. Your freedoms. So that you don't realize that the real people who are screwing you over are the powerful, are the elite, and are people who actually look like you.
Yes.
It's not the Barack Obamas of the world that are screwing you over. It's the Jeff Flakes, the Boehners, and the Trumps.
The Mitch McConnell.
Passing laws that screw you over. Right now, just as we were speaking, Congress passed a law with wonderful support from the Republicans to the point, and this was down party line, made Pence come in to break the tie, to make it harder. There was a law that made it easy for you, poor white people, to sue companies. They just repealed that law. In other words, what they did is legislatively protect the rich and the powerful, and you got screwed in the process. Guess what? You and your black neighbor have more in common. You and that poor Syrian neighbor who's just trying to make a living have more in common than the fucking CEO of Starbucks, AT&T, Verizon, etc.
No matter what political spectrum they are, whether
they're a liberal CEO or a conservative CEO, at the end of the day, their ideology doesn't matter. More often than not, they're white. And more often than not, they're going to preserve one thing and one thing alone. And that is their power at the expense of yours and other minorities. But they're going to convince you to be on board because you and them share a skin color. Don't fucking fall for it.
Fuck you, Bezos.
You have more in common with your economic class than you do your racial class or your cultural class. At the end of the day, screw the differences. Unite workers of the people and overthrow the bourgeois.
Yes, yes. Down with the 1%. Occupy Wall Street.
How did you not see? Oh my God. How did you not see Marxism shining through slowly?
Literally, Marxism was this whole podcast.
You didn't see
it. Down with the 1%.
Yeah. This was what's known as a materialist analysis of history.
I also wanted to say, for the record, Jeff Flake voted against net neutrality too. Yeah, that in and of itself.
He's not a decent guy just because he's decided to grow a pair now that he's...
Oh, because he's in degaff mode now.
Also, just wanted to say that the one person who's telling us to go against the 1% is part of the 1%
himself. Oh, would you stop it with that?
You fucking self-hailing... fucking rich elitist bastard.
I'm a man of the people.
I wanted to also put out that Atlantic article where the guy was talking about growing up with Richard Spencer. And this is true with a lot of them, right? He goes, when I grew up with Richard Spencer, he was a quiet, mediocre kid, got mediocre grades.
They're all mediocre.
Didn't say anything, didn't do anything. And then he found himself because he read Nietzsche and then went to Germany and studied.
For the record, it's actually really bad readings of Nietzsche. They're not even good at understanding what Nietzsche is trying to say. But that's a little literary nitpicking that's not necessary.
It's just my personal opinion that people who are so insecure about being forgotten by history, but they're really not talented enough to really do anything.
Oh, they're just bitter that mediocrity no longer cuts it.
What are you talking about? White mediocrity cuts it in today's society.
Anyways, V, you have a story for us.
So, last time we talked about the working class hero.
Gilberto Escamilla.
Who stole 800 pounds of beef. And, while humans are absolutely
man was
animals,
an unsung hero. Yeah.
My math was correct, by the way.
No, it wasn't.
It was until it wasn't.
Listen, okay, you need to stop harping on this math thing. I know it's like the most accomplished thing you've done.
We spent a week just going, wow.
Yeah.
It was proper mathematics.
So I wanted to go and take you guys into the cold boreal plains of Russia.
Russia. Hey, why you want to bring us to Russia? The Russians almost killed our grandparents.
Wow.
You son of a bitch. He's bringing up sore spots for us.
Triggered.
Yeah. You should have at least said TW first.
Go for it, V.
Go ahead. Now go ahead and tell us your ties to Russia, just like you have ties to Chechnya.
All right, so in Russia, there was a man named Vladimir Markov.
Solid name.
Vladimir Markov.
Now Markov was considered to be a generally good guy.
Uh-huh.
He lived in a little small town out there. It was pretty poor.
In Dagestan?
But unfortunately...
It's a place. Like, don't give me those looks. It's a place in Russia. It's called Dagestan.
You just literally just yell shit out, don't you?
Sometimes. Anyway, go ahead. Carry on.
So what happens is, turns out he's a poacher. So he goes out and starts killing tigers and shit to like get their paws and sell them to Chinese people for their dicks and everything.
That's racist.
We're just going to gloss over that racism.
Anyway.
I thought this Vladimir was a good guy.
No.
Oh, okay. Carry on.
Vladimir Markov decides that he's going to go after something known as an Amur tiger, which is considered to have kind of the chest of like a twin-sized bed. They're like really burly looking, but they're really, these really crazy-looking tigers. So he tries to shoot this tiger, right? The tiger gets wounded, and then Markov like basically scares him off while he's eating. Mm-hmm. So Markov essentially takes his prey away from him. Okay. This tiger stalks Markov, finds his cabin in the woods, goes in there, and effectively destroys everything with Markov's scent on it, right?
Okay.
He waits behind the door in the cabin for Markov to show up, and he splits him in half.
With, like, his claws?
Yeah, like, he, like, rips him apart.
Holy shit.
Now, this is what's crazy about it. They were studying everything because they were talking about, the author was talking about how, you know, he found, like, bloody boots with toe bones sticking out of it and shit.
Is this when they made that movie? The movie with Kurt Douglas in Africa with the man-eating tigers?
That was Lions.
Oh, was it Lions?
Yeah. I forgot. What I know was what that you're called? Talking about.
Heart of Darkness?
Something in the Shadow.
You got that one.
It was two of them. It was the Shadow and the Something.
Something, yeah. Go on.
Anyway, so they go and they realize, they're like, you know, this tiger actually had a really big mean streak on him because it wasn't like he was being reactive. He actually sought to take revenge. That tiger, they estimated, was waiting behind that door for Markov for anywhere between 12 to 48 hours. So that tiger was fucking pissed and was ready to commit revenge on this guy.
I just want to say that the sense of revenge of this tiger is very near and dear my own heart.
I know, really. And in the Chinese zodiac, we're tigers.
We are tigers.
I do. What am I again, a rooster?
I have a strong sense of revenge.
Yeah, we all do.
Not in the sense like I want to destroy people, but I want to live such an amazing life that I forget them. That's my goal in revenge. That's how I do revenge. The best sort of revenge. Live an amazing life. Fuck it all.
That's true. And then, you know, I mean, if you want to... I mean, the tiger kind of went the opposite way.
Yeah, or just tear him into two pieces.
Turns out
Hashtag currently nerdy spirit animals.
He killed someone like a week later, too. They had a hunting party go after him.
He didn't have enough.
He smelled human flesh. He got the scent of human blood.
He's like, Markov was good.
Yeah.
But that was just the beginning.
He's like, that tiger went against society. You know, he's a revolutionary. He's like Che Guevara.
All right. Well, why don't you tell us what you think about this crazy tiger, you wonderful listeners. Let us know what your thoughts are about Jeff Flake and about white supremacy and Richard Spencer. Hopefully this was actually an informative podcast. You got to learn a little bit behind the scenes of the movement, as well as our rantings and ravings as usual. Diz, why don't you let them know how they can get in contact.
You can tell us that we're Toit Like a Tiger on facebook.com/currentlynerdy, on Twitter @currentlynerdy, on the Instagrams @currentlynerdy, on the Tumblr currentlynerdy.tumblr.com, at the YouTubes search Currently Nerdy.
You would think it's because we're called Currently Nerdy.
You would think so, right? We're also on Stitcher.
But not under Currently Nerdy.
Google Play and iTunes under Currently Nerdy.
Can you imagine that one place that we're not actually under Currently Nerdy?
Yeah. CN somewhere. I don't know. But yes, give us some ratings and reviews. The more ratings you give us, the more reviews we get, the better it is for us on the podcast. More people can listen to us. So give us some ratings and reviews so we bump up and join like the iTunes top 100 and shit. So do that for us, please. And if you want to get a hold of us individually, you can. V, how can they get a hold of you?
Find me on my blog at thesandwichslayer.com. You can find me on Twitter or Instagram at vtran214. VYTRAN214.
You can catch me on Instagram or Twitter at AAOLOMI. In particular, on Instagram, you can see the behind the scenes of what I do as a historian on Instagram. Whereas on Twitter, you can hear my political ramblings. You can also catch me on my website, alialomi.com, or on our sister podcast, Head on History, which you'll be returning very soon. Diz.
I found the name of that movie, by the way. It was called The Ghost in the Darkness.
The Ghost in the Darkness.
It was with Val Kilmer.
What the hell did you call it? The Shadow?
Shadow. Shadow, Ghost.
The Ghost in the Darkness. Val Kilmer was in it. Yeah, Val Kilmer. I think it was Kurt Douglas.
It is Kurt Douglas.
Too. Oh, he's in it too.
Yeah, they're both in it. Val Kilmer is.
They look the same.
Yeah, but that's racist. They're both in the movie.
Anyway, right, Ben Affleck.
Yes. Fuck Ben Affleck. He's a groper. You could find me everywhere at Dizbulla. DizBullah. Send your nudes to me, please.
Please don't. For everyone here at Currently Nerdy, thank you for tuning in. And remember, stay smart, sexy nerds.
And we love you. Unless you have to go and hide your white supremacist tattoos to watch Richard Spencer give a speech on why white people are stupid.